Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters.
One more session from the Presentation Summit. And here was my thought. I gathered together literally an international group now that I just realize it. And we're going to talk about Morph and just kind of what Morph has done to change our whole outlook on presentation, motion graphics and presentation, and how it's kind of actually changed presentation design itself. And the reason I have everybody here, and I'll let them introduce themselves, is every single one of them has shown phenomenal examples of Morph. Ingrid didn't directly show it, but Richard kept saying, and my designer, Ingrid, did this one. And so he's very gracious not to take credit for what was phenomenal. So we're going to hear a lot of great stuff. So let's go quickly around the table and say introductions, where you're from, so I can prove I am the only U.S. citizen here. And the reason we're meeting is because I would never do the time zone thing to get all these people on the same call together. So this is ideal. It is also morning. After a big evening.
I don't know what you mean.
And these are the people that made it here. So introductions first.
This is Tom Howell from Synapsis Creative, based in Sydney, Australia.
Fantastic. Introductions.
Richard Goring from Bright Carbon, based in Boston, but as you can probably tell from my accent, from the UK.
Phenomenal.
I'm Ingrid, also from Bright Carbon, and I'm based in the UK, but I'm actually from France.
And I'm Simon Morton from Eiffel Presentations, based in the UK.
Fantastic.
Actually from Jamaica.
So quick question. Where did Eiffel get its name from? Because this is a great story. And I heard it many, many years ago, but I don't think anybody on this podcast has heard this story.
Well, a lot of people think it's French. And I go, oh, Eiffel as in the tower. No. That's what we called our first offices were Eiffel Towers. But no, originally my cunning plan was to do podcasts. And
seriously?
Yeah.
And that so was, the that first was, wait, wait, business, this is not a new business, though. No. So you were way ahead of the curve on that.
Too far ahead of the curve. That's the issue. So Earful Productions.
Oh, Earful?
Yeah. And then Eiffel Presentations. And Eiffel was the one that really took off. And Earful, I think I was probably just way ahead of the curve.
What happened to Mouthful?
Don't you worry,
I've got a whole bunch of the list.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Your eyes and throat. What was that one? I spit on you.
We've got the Sensible Business Group domain name, just thinking senses and all that sort of stuff. It never wins. So from Eiffel, that's the one that really kind of took off. And then it was just the source of many really punny gags that we could find, so Eiffel Towers and all that sort of stuff.
So, and that's the one I actually had heard. So
right, that, okay, yeah, that came after the name, but that's pretty much how it was.
Well, let's continue this conversation. How did Bright Carbon get it? I think we've heard this story before, but it's good.
Yeah, it's we started up. We needed to do stuff really quickly. It was, we can't spend time thinking about a really cool name, so we had an hour. None of the URLs of the names that we came up with were available. You needed a website, so we needed email addresses. So we collected a group of words that we liked the sound of, put them all into a browser that allows you to see what combination of those words is available as a URL, and Bright Carbon was top of the list.
So punny thoughtfulness and just technology searching. Tom, I actually don't know where your name came from.
We engaged a management consulting firm, paid $1.6 million for a brand consultancy to find out what the name would be. And it turned out it was Eiffel.
it was taken.
It's actually a scientific term that means basically two things working simultaneously together and sort of, and engaging together. And so it's that and creative, really. So it's to sort of, and it sort of symbolizes client and agency.
So I get that. So where does the scientific background for you come in to come up with that?
Not yet. Google helps play a significant role. I wanted to find that word that I had never heard of that meant to people or to things working together. And Synergy was a little tired, so
that's fantastic. And then TLC Creative is pretty simplistic. It was a name given to us. I am the T of TLC Creative. Lori is the L of TLC Creative, and Collar is our last name. So that was actually our high school dating name.
Oh, that's nice. Fantastic. So Tom is the only person that actually thought properly
about
his
name.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah, he's what we actually kind of comes to the conclusion.
So Morph, we have to have Office 365. Have you encountered where you've done work? I have a story about this, why I'm leading with this. Have you done design work? It's beautiful. You hand it off and the client goes, I don't think the animation quite works for me. And it's because they don't have Morph installed or available on their system. Have you guys encountered this?
I've had worse than that. I've had it where clients have gone, yeah, it kind of looks a bit of a mess. And they're like, really? It looks great on our screen. And they hadn't put it into slideshow mode. And this is kind of years back. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm going through it and I can kind of see where you're going with it. And yeah, they just hadn't actually hit it.
We've had that in all versions of PowerPoint. And, yes, and exactly, if anybody does want to try to do that, don't worry, it's not exclusive to Office 365.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I made the assumption that we're going to slideshow mode. Tom, have you encountered that where you just got the... Okay, we did. And here's my quick story on this. This is fairly recent. Working with a larger group and the one person who's actually... the key content knowledge base. So this person is very important to the content and the flow. Basically keeps, replying with, little nudges and just saying, this one just doesn't look right. Hey, I don't like the spinning text on this one and this and that. And we're like, boy, these are pretty dynamic. I mean, these are pretty much like going to After Effects level type of things. I'm like, we're liking these. Come to find out, older Mac 2011, PowerPoint for Mac 2011. Nothing works, like nothing. It is, and we just kind of had to say, listen, we're going to politely say we can't take any feedback on motion from you, but we might send you exported video so you can actually see it. But yeah, but we didn't realize this for several iterations down the road. So we were constantly changing because, he's getting, I don't even know if he defaults to fade. I mean, I don't know what it
was. Yeah, well, exactly. You'd be lucky if you get one of those.
And that's an older version of Mac. And it was, but he's the writer and he doesn't really care about Office. And it was kind of interesting. So as I said, we've had one more person join us, and it's not because she was out late with everybody else, we'd say, but we'd like to have you introduce yourself and where you're from. Oh, hold on. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Lori. I'm with TLC Creative from San Diego area, and good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. How was breakfast?
It was delicious.
See, it's morning.
We were geeking
here.
Out talking about master placeholders and what we could do with them. So sorry for the delay.
See, this where else in the world could you do that?
Exactly. Go ahead and grab your mic and hold. You can actually take it out of there if you want. You're very quiet.
Very quiet.
Oh, that is awesome. Everybody can do that if you want. You don't have to leave it on the table. Okay, so we just got done talking about Morph. Everybody gave their synopsis of what their company name came from. And I just gave the example of how our one client, our key content guy, doesn't have Morph, and we basically had to tell him politely, I'm not going to listen to you anymore. So anybody else with so at this point, anybody with a Morph story let's actually start with the duo down here, Richard and Ingrid, because Richard is a phenomenal designer. He does amazing stuff. And the only thing he did during his whole tour, he did a presentation on Morph, which, by the way, I did last year, and it was, you knocked it out. Everybody was just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Ingrid, tell us some things you like about Morph, because I'm going to eventually talk about your 3D model you showed me as well, which has nothing to do with Morph, but it was just so cool. We got to talk about it. But tell us a little bit about Morph and how it's changed your design workflow. Because from what Richard says, you just live in this every day.
Maybe not every day, because it really depends on clients and if they've got it and if they don't have it. But I certainly try to do a lot in it when I can and experiment with it, because I like experimenting stuff.
That's great.
But I think it makes, so before, it makes animation a lot more easy if you were using motion path before and transition and things like that. And now you just need to move one box from one side of the slide to the other side of the slide, and it just does it very easily without having to bother with motion path and grow shrink animation and spin animation.
By the way, the examples I saw, there was a lot more than a box. One side. Well, actually, I take it back. That's where Richard started. I'm pretty sure that was your input. And then it moved on to, so actually the text one was really cool. That was a really great idea.
That was original.
Can you describe that one to us? Because you had this text. This was so cool. The audience made him stop and recreate it to explain the concept of how it worked. And it was a great concept. It was great.
So one of the things that's a joy working with Ingrid and other people at the Bright Carbon team is that we get to try to break stuff. And Morph is obviously the main target of it. It's kind of, how can we really destroy it? Which is great coming to the presentation summit, and the developers of Morph are here and they kind of cry. But they're great and fix some stuff. So one of the techniques is if you've got a lot of text, it's quite nice to be able to, you know, increase or decrease the character spacing, the kerning. So you've got spaces there. And you think, well, maybe it'd be a really cool effect if you had like close characters and then characters that are separated. And wouldn't it be cool if you could do that with morph? And you've got the morph effects where you can do by object, but if you go to the right-hand side of the transitions tab on the ribbon, you can choose effect options there, just like with animations, and you can choose by object or by word or by character. Oh, by character is really cool. Let's play with that. But it doesn't work because if you expand your character spacing, PowerPoint sees the letter and the space as being one block. So when you do the morph, it kind of like it's a weird stretchy fade and doesn't look very good. So I was talking to Alex, the PowerPoint developer who kind of runs Morph, and saying, yeah, this is a problem. Amazingly, 24 hours later, on his phone, he's fixed it. And so that's going to be a release in
well,
a couple
a
months' time.
That made it for the rest of us, which is, I was like, that because I've run into the issue. I already know that that's not even an option. And when you did, I was like, wait, that's not an option.
So the hack is you put characters in between, but you just put spaces because, of course, spaces are characters. And so now you don't change the kerning, you don't change the character spacing of it. And so you've just got now extra spaces. You do your morph transition by character.
It was so
and it
smooth
just
and so
goes
good.
Out.
Yeah, it really was really, really a great simple hack because using a character space allowed morph to actually morph as opposed
so
to
it looks
create the fading.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that was very cool. You missed it, Tom. That was a good one. Actually, let's talk about characters though, because Tom had was it the word imagine that flies pops
cool.
up on yours?
Yeah, that was one of the pieces that we've done.
So talk about you had imagine it literally popped up faster than PowerPoint can do, and I knew why, but I don't think many people would figure it out because how did you set up the words? It was on a blue background, just solid blue background.
Yeah, so we one of the things that we do in Morph and we don't use Morph as much as we should, and I think in this podcast 2 years ago at the presentation summit 2 years ago, I said, we still can't use it because it's not backwards compatible. Now we are producing more and more PowerPoints that are just videos. The client actually just wants a video. And so we use PowerPoint just as a tool to output a video. So we are using Morph a lot more. And one of the things we've sort of delved into is using Morph for kinetic typography. Kinetic typography being the dynamic movement of text, to be able to reveal text one frame at a time, or letter by letter across a space. And it's incredibly fast to do in PowerPoint. In fact, I would go so far as to say, hands down faster than any motion designer can do it in. I think you can do it faster in PowerPoint in using Morph. And so you take the two slides and you literally just move your text to the next slide. You move the text to the position that needs
but
to
how
be.
How did you make it appear faster than a 0.01 transition? Morph has, we have a limit on how fast we can actually get things to pop. But I'm talking about the color thing where you went from blue to color. You had the whole word on the slide, right? No matter what, you just changed its fill.
Yes. Yeah. You change the fill of the to transparent,
and which is great because the word imagine went literally it was like a little rainbow blink 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 blink, and with morph they would have to move, but all you did was leave it in the same position, right? Did I get
as
this
you
right?
Duplicate slide over and over and over and over again. Yes.
And all you did was change the character colors though, so the whole word was there. You just couldn't see the whole word at a time.
Yes.
It was so fast. It was so awesome.
And to produce that takes 10 seconds.
And you didn't use morph. For the that one part.
Oh, did you use morph
for those,
no transition?
For those eight slides, just no transition.
Oh my goodness,
and
that's
then,
right.
As soon as the text started moving, it was morph.
It was so fast, there was other things moving. I didn't even notice there wasn't things moving
it's
at that
It's a combination.
Moment.
Yes.
Oh, that's even more amazing.
So there's a lot of dynamic movement in there. Yes, there's a lot of dynamic movement in there. As soon as you finish the word, you then use that word as part of a morph for the next transition.
Yeah, that soft stuff
and the
in the
whole
upper,
thing moves.
The rings were moving up in the upper corner, so I thought it was morphing the whole time. You're right. Okay, so he did a brilliant thing of not using morph. He used what we've had since PowerPoint 95, but it was done very well.
No, there is more morph in that presentation.
Oh,
than,
no, there's
than
a
you
lot
would,
in there.
Yeah, and all the actual text movement is all morph.
Yeah.
So anytime you see the text move and a new line appear, that's all morph.
And the donut rings in the upper corners, I really like that motion feel. That was really elegant, actually.
It is interesting thinking about past presentations as we've been exploring morph and the examples that we were giving a year ago, 2 years ago, and what people have done with it since. It is so fun just seeing the creativity.
Now, Richard, what was the name of your session you did, just so I can, before I say it?
Designing with Morph, I think.
Okay. And the first thing you did was say, who has not used Morph. And
yeah,
I really wish I would have taken a photo because, you know, there was 50 plus people in there. Yeah. And I would say over half raised their hand, at least half.
But it's around that.
It was like, wait a minute, this is, you know, so it was really impressive. I mean, he impressed him moving a box from one side to the other, and we knew it was all.
Yeah,
you know,
that's Richard's thing, though. He does the box
it's
thing.
It's all and the British accents. You can get away with a lot with a British accent. In America, anyway.
It was fantastic. From studio design portion, because Simon, you're not necessarily on the content creation side as much as you are on masterminding everything. Is your studio leveraging Morph?
Hugely. And yeah, very similar, I think, to all of the stories around the table. One sort of ping that up in my mind was we were on site in Georgia, not Georgia, America, because we were terribly excited about going over there. It was Georgia that used to be a Russian state, so not quite as glamorous as you might have thought. And we were working with a large telecom brand, and I think we were chatting over a beer about this last night, and one of the...
I actually assumed you meant Georgia, like Atlanta or something.
No, nothing that exciting. It really was.
This makes more sense now, yeah.
Okay. And leading up to the session, we were kind of kicking our heels and a little bit bored, and one of the designers that we brought over with us, just started playing around with Morph and took their logo and their brand and did a kind of a little 30-second movie. We showed it to the CMO. And I went, when did you do this? And a couple of hours just playing around. And we know that we've bent the brand a little bit, but it was just a bit of fun. And we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to get a very similar treatment. And it just kind of, yeah, there's all of the brand stuff and all of the hype that goes around that. But the actual motion graphics, it's all sat there on our PCs. And put it in the right hands of somebody like Ingrid and away you go. It really is powerful.
Yeah, exactly what you're talking about, because you actually get clients that are now saying, we want a video export. We don't care what tool you do it in. You can obviously create a better price point. So I've often talked, you guys like using, we can do edit points on shapes and, you know, there's sort of Bezier curves. I always refer to it as Illustrator 2.0. I now have a new phrase. Morph is After Effects Lite. I'm just going with that one from here forward, because PowerPoint has all the tools, but they're always like a notch below the dedicated tool. But you can accomplish just as much and usually half the time. Although editing points is a lot more finicky than Illustrator. You can still...
That's painful.
Yeah, I can. what else we talk about on Morph? Ingrid, can you give us like, what's something you've done? Because I didn't get to see a lot of your work. I got it filtered through Richard, which could be a big filter.
You saw the session yesterday.
Yes, yes.
It was all Ingrid.
Yeah, but what else?
You've seen it work.
Like, real client stuff.
It's kind of awkward because, as we all experience, you can't guarantee that people have Office 365. And so when we're creating stuff for clients, it's still often doing it with animations to achieve the same effects.
Yes,
but
then yes.
It's kind of work. But Ingrid traveled. Maybe tell everyone about
that. Yeah. So earlier this year, I went to Chile. So I took a 6 weeks sabbatical.
And hold on. You spent 6 weeks in Chile, but how long have you been in the States?
1.5
Does she ever be in the office?
Do you not get on with your colleagues? Yeah. Is that the thing?
Okay, so you travel, you gather, it's for all inspiration, so you're in Chile now, which I wasn't expecting.
So yeah, I went on my own with my backpack and stuff. And I came back and I had the same thought my dad has whenever he goes on holiday, and thought I'd make a PowerPoint about it. But if you work in presentation, you kind of want to raise the level a little bit. So I did an interactive deck that kind of went through all the places I'd been and the things I'd shown. And I'm kind of a nerd, so I gathered data during my whole trip on how long I spent in trains and planes and where I slept and how much I walked and stuff like that. So I did a few different graphs. And I basically used Morph a lot and hyperlinks a lot building it.
Also, it's truly interactive. Wow.
Yeah. So you can just navigate through basically the 42 days I was away and just see. So there's 6 graphs of all that data I gathered, and you can just switch from one to the other. I use hover states to just navigate from one to the other. So you can just hover over one
little
day and stuff like that.
How cool.
So you see it, and it's like a website. It's like an app kind of thing, that kind of you're moving the cursor. it's all PowerPoint, but it's, I mean, it's a stupid number of slides, yeah. But the hover states mean that you then hyperlink too.
Yeah, but
from a user perspective, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Can you describe the hover states? Because I don't know if that's going to be a familiar, I'm not sure I can visualize that.
It's the action button, so you could select a shape, and I use lots of little dots. So I selected dot and then went into action, and then you can select that something is happening when your mouse hovers over the wheel circle. And then what I set it to do is that it takes it to another slide. So I made up like lots of little black dots, and then if you hover over one, it takes you to a slide where that little dot is bigger and blue, so it shows that it's highlighted.
Brilliant.
And the transition is a morph, so it's smooth.
Yeah, it's a morph most of the time.
That's interesting. We're doing another one. We do a number of them now, but we're doing touchscreen interfaces for trade shows. We're actually authoring the whole thing in PowerPoint. And the reason is we sell it, much to your point, Tom, or much to your kind of business mentalities, is that they can make edits on site. You know, we're going to leave as editable PowerPoint, but don't try and mess with it because there's always a combination of hyperlinks, custom shows, you know, like direct hyperlink, custom shows, and also the Zooms, where we actually turn off usually the Zoom because we don't want the actual Zoom, we just want the effect of it. But we don't do the hover state because it's a touchscreen interface. And I almost forgot that that's an option.
Yeah, it's a nice idea.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
In terms of when the client hasn't got Office 365, one of the things we've done, and it's a workaround, but it's not perfect, is just convert that morph transition to video and stick it into video.
Has anybody used, and I was thinking about this last night, actually based on what Ingrid demoed to me, like you can see 3D models on your phone, but you can't interact with them. I actually just had a thought last night that we could actually give, We could put the presentation with Morph on OneDrive and just let them open it up with the web app. You know, I believe Dropbox, if you click it, it opens up in that, but that should preview all of Morph because Morph is web enabled for viewing. Is anybody thought? I mean, it was kind of a new thought. Like, hey, for the clients that don't have it, I might have a path to say, hey, you can view it with this link. And it's just going to open up the free online PowerPoint for web. Is that the word I'm looking for? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of that,
you just say you're cheapskates. Just come on. For goodness' sake.
I may have actually hit that. Like, go down to Costco, spend $100, upgrade your whole life. Come on.
It's actually a problem that is unique to our industry in graphic design. I don't think there's anywhere in the world that an agency goes, hey, we've produced this video, and the client goes, oh, it doesn't work for me. The agency goes, what version of Windows are you using? Let me troubleshoot that for you.
I beg your pardon? Are you not saying that the entire video graphic production world didn't use Macs and all of their clients use PCs and say, I can't open a .mov file? Yeah. Or I don't have, what's a codec?
But the difference was, they didn't give a shit. they didn't care at all. I'll edit that out later.
Song's back.
But that was the whole thing, is that the agency would go, here's your file. And that's how PDF gained a foothold. Nobody had a PDF reader, and agencies kept going, no, here's a PDF. This is what you get. This is how you preview it, until the world changed. Whereas now there seems to be a really big onus on, as an agency in presentations, if it doesn't work, you become technical troubleshooters. And I really don't think any other agencies, even video agencies, went to like, what version are you using? Have you tried clicking here, moving in here, opening this window?
It's a great observation.
You have to be technical support.
So anyway, so there's a British TV program called The IT Crowd, which I think kind of made it over here. Lovely, but also very isolated IT support guys. They're in the basement of this big office, and they get phone calls all the time, and it's just, have you turned it off and on again, kind of thing. And one of the guys, he just always says this, he has a recording so that it's like a call center thing. He says, hello, IT. Pause. Have you turned it off and on again? Pause. Great. See you next time. It's just a recording, so they do whatever they like.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
You feel like you could record a lot of that kind of tech troubleshooting.
And it is. What version do you have? It's the same. Yeah, what version are you using? What environment is it?
I think it's troubleshooter that just runs through the same questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I also think that the relationship we build with our clients is you do end up taking a lot of that responsibility on as well. I don't know how you guys feel, but it's kind of you live it with them all the way through, and it's not, there you go, it wraps up, it's yours now, and yeah, behavior.
Oh, blessing and a curse.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, you're
definitely
that
drives
touchstone.
Better partnerships, but you have to become a technical expert.
Yeah.
And everyone that represents your company who is client-facing has to be able to engage in those technical conversations. And I think that's a challenge, because if you're hiring account managers from other agencies or if you're developing teams, you have to train them in how to be a technical troubleshooter in PowerPoint, which is a challenge in and of its own right.
Technical. It's not a great combination. Yeah. Or it's not an easy one to find. Yeah.
It's a really difficult one.
So Troy, Laurie, you're kind of the creatives, but also you're on site with clients. So what are the kinds of things that you come across? Because you're live with people.
Oh, on the technical side.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's
come
that as well.
A lot of things, exactly, with people. Yeah. But and we were talking about this last night, I believe, Simon, that we have about a year long, I won't call it an apprenticeship, but for a designer to come into our office and then be able to go onto a show site, you know, you've got to be able to interact with people. So people skills are professional and needed. You've got to know PowerPoint really, really well. I mean, they're going to ask for anything from charts to photos to video. We know it all. So, you know, it takes time for designers to kind of pick up those skills, translate those traditional, I'll just say, school learnings into our tool. But then the third part is we are also called upon for the technical. We don't just show up and say, okay, here it is. We're actually setting up the computer, setting up resolution, setting up multiple outputs, configuring graphics cards, working with the switch op and figuring out what the technical patches are, and then figuring out why things aren't scaling. So we actually keep people in our environment or being mentored on site, you know, being a second graphics for about a year before we're going to trust anybody with our reputation. So yeah, it's a big challenge. I mean, it's not an easy find, but I think we get called because we continuously work on it.
So you guys go even one step further than the technical troubleshooting, and that's you then know the whole audiovisual environment, and you have to know that. And so assuming that technical knowledge is really long way from a design agency. You're a design agency, a technical agency. It's like a print. It's like a print agency making ink. That's the equivalent. Yeah. You're not just owning the printing press. You've got to make the ink.
Lori started with printers that mix their own colors, right?
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
They didn't just get it off a shelf. It was like, I can make that. No formula. I can make that.
But it's asking those questions in the with the end result in mind. You know, the kiosk example. You know, we know you're making a kiosk. Okay, what kind of computers? What software are they going to have? What's the environment going to be? You know,
by the way, all that stuff is put into the statement of work, the SOW. So it says, if it doesn't work in this environment, we're not guaranteed. This is the environment. So.
How sick are your statement of works?
2 pages for those. Yeah. I don't really believe
it. But when we're going on site, a lot of times too, it's like, where is this going to be projected? Is this going to be in a boardroom? Is this going to be in a ballroom? I mean, things I'm sure we all ask, but getting down to the nitty gritty, trying to pre-plan so that when we go and we show up, we're ready to go. Mm-hmm.
So I had two questions. I know we're limited on time. We're all leaving to go to sessions. As a matter of fact, Richard's
session, I think. Yeah.
But I don't know how long ago it was, but Simon, you talked about the idea of converting to video. That is actually an area where we tend to use it. Ingrid, do you want to bring up one of the examples that we showed yesterday? So I did a session yesterday on Morph on designing.
Yes.
And Troy was there, putting me off in the front row. Thank you so much. As was Laurie. Right in front of me. Anyway, then Troy had to go off and do a session, and I couldn't attend because I had another one competing,
yes,
which
was
on storytelling with Morph. And so it's kind of now not just about making things look good, but bringing the story to life. And we did one which, again, Ingrid was involved with, at least, about the round tripping. Okay, maybe not. So we had a really complicated sequence of kind of a scientific type thing, and the best way to do it is Morph. You've got all these different things moving, showing how the thing works. But of course, you can't guarantee that would work. Also, we wanted it like a small little picture. So we then
full slide size?
No, because we had the whole machine and how that works, and this is what's going on inside the machine, and we created that with Morph. So we did it all as a little separate deck.
Yes.
Save it as a video,
yes,
and you re-import the video back in. And that's a really nice way of doing it. That convert to video. It doesn't have to be the full presentation, but the round-tripping idea, and you've had a podcast before on video round-tripping and just the levels that you can take it to, and Morph is brilliant for that.
And then Tom shows some cool stuff around video and actually sort of cutting that video down, animating on top of it, and doing some, so you can really add layers upon layers upon layers. And yeah, as Tom's always said, as an authoring tool, PowerPoint is so flexible, and it gives us that wonderful USP of going, there you go, you've got the source file now, Mr. or Mrs. Customer. Do what you will. They'll screw it up. So you end up getting it back and working with them again. But it's, yeah, there's always that, yeah.
Actually, that's a great, how do you manage? Because when you do Morph, we have content on the slide prior and the slide after. How do you manage that when the clients start working with the files? Because they're going to insert, oh, I have a new data point. They're going to insert a slide, and suddenly things don't work because they don't have that knowledge. I think this is one of the harder knowledge things for a lot of users to understand, that this animation is dependent on things before and after. How do you guys manage that when a client wants to, like, when they take ownership, do you get calls back? Your stuff is horrible. It broke. It doesn't work.
It goes back to, again, sort of points we've already raised, which is the blurred line between us and the client now means that actually they just hit the back phone and we leap into action. And I think that will always be the case. And that's why I'm sure all of us sat around here, we're in that beautiful position where, yeah, certainly for Eiffel, 85-90% of our revenue is from customers we've worked with previous years. It's recurring revenue because they've got the trust and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And that relationship, the getting them out of that sticky situation, is key to building that relationship.
Yeah, I think I'm tempted to create a tutorial to hand off to clients, just kind of explain the before and after.
Education,
yeah.
One of the approaches that we try to take with it, though, is you limit the use of Morph. So it's unlikely that
okay, we're editing out that part.
No, but it's just kind of like, it's sensible use of it. So so the idea of adding in new slides, people do that all the time. So it's right, here is a sequence. It's highly unlikely that within this like three-slide sequence or whatever, you're going to need to insert a slide. You'll do one before and you'll do one after, but it won't break that morph. And then it's kind of not relying too much on Morph for everything, so they have that opportunity to, so you like modularize the presentation, tiny little snippets, and so they can do things within
that's
it.
That's a great mentality.
Breaking the Morph sequence every now and then to give them that flexibility works really nicely.
Ooh, I like that phrase, the Morph sequence. Don't mess with this sequence.
It's all about sequence, though, isn't it? Like, we talk about animations, and you can
also use PowerPoint sections and say, this section is just not editable by you.
Sections would be a really nice way of doing it as well, because they can see that in the slide sort mode. Yeah, brilliant.
I'm racing here. Okay, so Ingrid showed me last night, she had this great 3D model. And you actually did it with you didn't use SketchUp, you used free 3D Builder, right? So you got to describe it, because what was really cool is we're sitting at dinner and she pulls out her phone. I was like, oh, this will never work. And it actually worked. So we're not talking about Morph now. But first of all, Ingrid, accomplished 3D developer content, and she actually, because 3D models, Office is very limited when you come to skinning and light and everything else. And they have a great document out there. Search my blog. I put a link to it. But it was very cool. But first of all, I couldn't figure out what she was saying to begin with. So I was like, okay, now I'm really intrigued because it just sounds
and
exotic.
It was very loud.
So tell us about yours. Pull that microphone.
Just say the word, because apparently I can't say it.
It's the spinning animation. Zoetrope.
Zoetrope.
Yeah.
But the way she says it's so much better.
I know.
Most things sound better with a French accent.
So describe really quick the process, and then I want to just talk about mobile.
So I kind of wanted to do something with 3D models. So I'm an animation student for past. So I like the primitive form of animation. So I thought I'd do one of those old things. So I built, I think it was 16-faced wheel in 3D Builder. And then I applied a texture of a rabbit jumping on each of those 16 faces, brought it into PowerPoint, and then just used the turntable animation, going very, very fast at some point. So basically, when you go into show mode, it looks like the rabbit is jumping because the turntable animation is going so fast. That was it.
So there's a few things. If you haven't seen it, it's really nice. It's and you put a nice background behind it, a little perspective and everything else. But it's a 3D model. Now, the way I would have done is I would have actually created a film strip animation sequence in the 3D model, because now PowerPoint recognizes animation sequence, and I would have just said, go for it. But Ingrid actually built something that was round and then used PowerPoint's animation turntable to animate it. And I was like, okay, that's a really, really smart idea. And it was really cool. And
well done.
It actually worked on, and what is it an iPhone or what do you have? Is it Android?
It's Android, but it didn't work in PowerPoint on my phone, but I exported a video.
So oh, I saw a video of it. Yeah. Okay. On the mobile phone, she could show us the whole build of it, but you can't interact with the 3D model. So, okay. Yeah. So I'm really impressed, but not as impressed with mobile because I thought mobile actually played the turntable animation.
You still need to share it. That sounds
awesome.
That sounds
fantastic. I'm going to stitch it back to Morph because every year we do a roadshow with our existing clients and new clients, things like that. This year we actually built a 3D model of our universe, and it's four buildings in a mini cityscape. We did a really big rebrand, and a big part of our rebrand is isometric illustration. Yep. And we went, well, let's build a 3D model, and then the camera will actually hit the isometric angle, and then we can have isometrics pop through the 3D. And so we actually laid out, so the 3D model is just a turntable animation, and then we've hyperlinked each of our buildings. Yep. And when you click on the building, the model will spin and morph to the slide. And so it's a dynamic morph to the specific position whenever you choose it. And so the camera angle will actually pan back, the model will spin to the right building, and then you pan in, and then we actually pull the top off the
and
building.
You're using morph for those pans, right?
Yes, yeah. It's morph for all the 3D animation. The biggest issue we ran up with in 3D is we updated the 3D model. And there's no way to know your camera positioning in 3D models. And so the only hack that we did was we actually had to get into the zip file of the PowerPoint, which is renaming the PowerPoint as a zip file, and forcing a replace of the model. And we thought we're going to break everything here. So we updated the whole model.
Same exact file name,
but the actual construction of the model was completely different. With extra things, and we deleted things, and it updated, and the camera angles were perfect the second time around. So it was the only way that, because we had, I mean, it's a 90-slide presentation, the only way we could actually guarantee those positions rather than
really quick, how did you get into the PowerPoint file to put that new image in there, to replacement image?
Instead of it being a .pptx, you delete the pptx, you name it ZIP, which Windows then says, no, you don't want to do this. And you bravely say, yes, I do.
So I really wanted this for two reasons. One, because I just wanted to hear you say Zed, because we never use it. And two, Lori, how would you approach that? How would you break into that?
Oh, I would use 7-Zip, because then I don't have to go to rename it. I just open right-click and open it with 7-Zip. And I do that all the time.
We do that for image editing. Like if the client says, hey, this image needs to be more blue and it's got specific crops on it, things like that, we'll just go straight in using 7-Zip, open it in Photoshop, blue it out.
No, no, no. 7-Zip is basically a dynamic change to, it changes the file name to zip and lets you open it up.
Yeah, we use 7-Zip as well, but it's external program.
It's a freebie. It's great. It's a 64-bit. It's just really, really fast and easy. Do you guys right click on any, you can do a Word doc or anything. You just right click and it's a compression tool. So it'll uncompress anything. It'll make a compressed zip or RAR or anything you want. Actually, I don't know if it does RAR. But you just right click and you say open archive. It dynamically takes the PowerPoint, opens you up into your
file structure
view. So you can go into the PPT and the media usually is where you look. We do it all the time just really quickly to look for an errant 50, 60 meg zip, a TIFF file.
This is off of Morph, but this is the number one thing. When I have a bloated file and I have exhausted all my things, I will go in through zip and find the culprit.
Look there first before I run like NX PowerLite, because I don't want NX PowerLite touching everything. I usually just find one culprit image, like, oh, look, it's a TIFF that's 52 megs. I think I found the problem. Let's just solve this one.
Two things on this. So to complete Tom's bit, if anyone wants to recreate it, you've got the model. It's only a single thing. So you have to have hidden objects over your model to hyperlink, or did you have multiple objects in the model?
You're just showing the vantage point of the model, right?
It's just the vantage point. So the actual links themselves are boxes separately to the model.
If you got a single model though, and you don't want the labels, you can also just put like hidden boxes over various parts of it, so that when you as a user click, it will go to that. And of course, you then need to reposition all of those boxes on the next slide. So that's a neat way of doing it. Absolutely. And then the NX PowerLite bits, one of the things that we are wary of with compressing things.
I've never seen
things,
that issue, but we should probably look at your settings.
Well, Why do you want to not compress images, Ingrid, in PowerPoint?
Because it breaks Morph. If you're cropping in and out of a picture in Morph and using
that, it gives you two different images.
No, you probably have the NX PowerLite. They have that little checkbox that says if it's cropped, reinsert it. We don't let Morph do, no, no. We don't let NX PowerLite actually break apart tables for us and make them images. And we also don't let it
delete the crop area.
Delete the cropped area, which gives it a new image name. And that's an even better reason because it'll ruin more for relationships.
I hadn't thought of that.
And again, when you're doing that in the default PowerPoint, you don't have NX PowerLite. It kind of it encourages you to delete the cropped areas of pictures, right. And that can really screw
it. Yeah, it's the default.
Just be wary of that.
But I actually thought you were talking about how you had one set of screen captures we couldn't read because they're so pixelated. So you must be using a really high compression thing on NX PowerLite. Did you, didn't you have, was it in your session where you had three things where suddenly they were so low res? They were, maybe it wasn't your session.
No.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was Nolan's session. Okay. Nolan did that.
Sorry. Very day here.
For those of you who can't see, that was a very perplexed look. Okay. I've only got a few minutes left. I wanted Tom to mention this one new thing. Tell us about your new corporate template because it has no animation in it, I don't believe. Or at least it's not based on animation.
No, it's not based on animation. Our internal template, our own template that we create slides in, is all morph. And so every asset that we have has a position on slide and it has a position off slide. So no matter how you reshuffle the slides, there will always be the on animation and the off animation. So we use the off canvas area, which is the area outside the slide, to house all of the image assets. And we have a specific on position and off position. So if you transition to another slide, you know that those assets will move in that direction and new assets will come on from another direction or from a specific specified direction.
I thought it was first of all, it's not a true template because not everything's on the master slide because you can't morph master slide stuff. But the fact that it was interchangeable on your slide was great. Yeah. Because Lori did her talk and she had morph running throughout. And it was basically just subtle background motions, but you couldn't reshuffle yours, I don't think.
Yeah, you could.
You could.
Uh-huh. I was very diligent as I was creating it, but yeah.
Tom, you must have mentored her. Thank you. That was phenomenal. Because it was really, really
it's
impressive.
Actually Lori that mentored me.
There you go.
With that, you know, we got to go. Richard's got to talk. We're going to say goodbye. So everybody,
you've
thank
gotta
you.
You've got to talk straight afterwards.
And I've got to talk straight after that. It's going to be really fun. Richard, what's your talk? Really quick.
It's beyond hyperlinks. It's all sorts of interactive stuff.
Very much kind of what we just
And Ingrid
on
is
here.
Presenting her Patagonia trip.
Oh, good.
Seriously, yeah. Sneak preview.
Yeah. Oh, good. And Troy, what's your talk?
Mine's called Really Big. We're talking about presentations that are like the width of this table. You know, they're just going to be massive.
You mentioned that on the podcast. I thought, got to come to that. That was
first
on my list.
It's really geeky and a lot of math.
Yeah, wrapping up.
Obviously.
Okay, we are wrapping up because we're heading out. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. I don't know when this will go live, so I'll give you all an email, but it will go live when you hear this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.